Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. And you listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Time for that Monday basketball conversation. We do this each week. Talk a little NBA hoops, recap everything that went down over the weekend, and we're going to do it right now with our guy James Holas. Always kind enough to join us every Monday, and as we get down to about the final 20 games of the NBA season, things I can't say are heating up because I think our 10 teams from each conference are set. We'll get into that in just a moment. James, it's great to get you back on. Thank you.
If the Celtics hadn't beat Phoenix the other day, I would have refused your invitation today. But luckily, we're back on the side with a W, so I'm here to talk basketball.
Listen, Boston holds an 8-game lead in the Eastern Conference, and the Bucks just lost to the Lakers without LeBron James. You're okay. You can afford a couple of setbacks.
We were just talking about this off air. I don't care who you're playing. I don't care what happened. Unless your best two players got kidnapped by aliens at the start of the fourth quarter, blowing a 22-point fourth quarter lead is unacceptable. But it's water under the bridge right now.
Yeah, you know, I guess we could talk about this once again because there was an interview I saw with Frank Vogel. It was about a month ago, and Vogel made the comment. It was during one of those timeout breaks. He made the comment that no double-digit lead in the NBA is safe anymore. And, James, I know you and I have talked about this before, but I get the question all the time. Why is it so different today? I think you just look at points per game right now, and I can look at the Western Conference. I got it pulled up here. Oklahoma City's averaging 120 points per game. The Nuggets are averaging 115 per game. You just go down the list. You look at the amount of points that teams are averaging. That's why no 20-plus point lead in the second half is safe. I mean, we're seeing it turn on a dime. Well, look, the Lakers and the Clippers. This just happened 2 weeks ago, right? I know there was no Paul George in that game, but the Clippers blew a 20-point lead. It happens so regularly now in the NBA.
We both know it. Just the three-point shooting, right? Offenses are so sophisticated. They can get a three early, get a three late. Guys get hot. And not just the fact that there's so many threes shooting, it's the fact that now almost everyone except for like your center is shooting them, right? A team like Sacramento, everyone from their power forward, Trey Lyles, to their two guard, three guard, and the point guard now, De'Aaron Fox has said never to be a three-point shooter, and he's probably put up 5 or 6 a game, right? So, like, it's almost broken the offensive schemes in basketball. And you got a couple guys get hot, and, you know, I think somebody – I literally just saw an article where the headline was a 12-point lead is the same as, like, a 20-point lead now is the same as, like, a 12-point lead a few years ago, you know? It's nothing. It's gone in 3 minutes. So I personally like it. I think because now there's not as many blowouts where teams just throw their hands up and say, okay, we're down 25 in the third. Let's get the bench in there. Now they know they have a shot.
And I agree with you as far as the three-point shooting. The shot clock obviously plays a factor as well, right? Because when you used to get an offensive rebound, it would reset to 24. It's only restarting now to 14. That matters. You're getting more offensive possessions because of it. I think that was the NBA's plan. But, James, I also can't ignore the idea that defense is pretty shoddy right now with the NBA. I mean, it just is. If I'm not mistaken, there's only two teams. No, I'm going to take that back. There's about three teams in the Eastern Conference that are holding teams under 110 points per game. That's very telling. One of them happens to be your Boston Celtics.
Yeah, man. And the defensive rules have changed so much, right? And I get it. It's skewed. They wanted to open up the floor, more offensive freedom. Maybe they've overcorrected just a bit, but it's fine. I'm not going to complain because basketball, first and foremost, is entertainment. And, yes, it is entertaining to see guys dunk and get threes up all the time. Now, defense also, as we both know, is more situational now, right? It's about getting key stops, not necessarily saying I'm going to hold this guy under 100. It's about saying on these last five possessions, we can't let him score. We got to only let him score on two of them, you know? So that's what it's more about these days. And the good defensive teams are more situational versus maybe scheming to try and, like, you know, stop everything, so.
Again, our guest right now, James Holas, joining us to talk NBA basketball. James, I typically try to stray away from these types of conversations, but I have to get your thought on it because I was on a show last week. I was asked about it. We actually went into a fairly in-depth conversation. I want to get your thoughts on the idea of Rookie of the Year right now. Anyone outside of Wemby, I guess about 2-3 months ago, it would have seemed insane. But you and I talked last week about Wemby and Chet Holmgren really not liking one another, right? There's some legitimate animosity. And when you really dig deep into the stats, I think a lot of people could make a fair argument to say that Chet may be the rookie of the year. I'm curious as to your thoughts between those two, and I think you and I share the same opinion. It's nice to kind of see a little rivalry from two rising stars here in the league.
So I don't think it's even close. I think Wembanyama has stretched out the lead where, pun intended, because he's so long. But, yeah, I think, sure, Chet is a very, very good player. This is almost like maybe Alonzo Mourning versus Shaquille O'Neal, where one guy, hey, Alonzo is amazing. He's a Hall of Famer, you know, great player, but then Shaq was just on a different level. And so I'm not saying, obviously, Wemby's equivalent to Shaquille O'Neal, but I think he just, he is this in a different class as a player than Chet, which isn't insulting to Chet, because Chet's great in his own right. He's a great second or third banana. Maybe on a terrible team, he'd be averaging Wemby kind of numbers, you know, and just, you know, in the lottery. But Wembanyama is showing to be a real deal, legit defensive of the year, defensive player of the year candidate. The handle and the shot are just different than Chet. Chet is nice. Wemby's just different. It's like Clyde Drexler and Michael Jordan almost, where one guy is the class of it, and the other guy is close in a lot of ways, but different enough ways where that other guy is still just leagues better. So that's why I'm with Wemby right now. I think Wemby's, you know what? I thought maybe the hype was a little overhyped at first, and then you watched him and saw some good things, but lately he's strung together some performances, and he's done some things that he's going to be a generational type guy.
No, I actually like the Shaq comparison, okay? And I know that you're not comparing the way Wemby and Shaq play, and for anyone who views what you said is to that extent, the game's not played that way today. I'm just looking at it in the way they affect the game. When Shaq came in, we had never seen anyone his size that could move that fast, that could pass that well out of the post, right? I mean, he was a dominant force that we hadn't seen in our lifetime. I think Wemby's the same way, right? He's not necessarily a guy that's going to beat you with power down low, but in terms of affecting the game, we haven't seen anything like it.
Yes, exactly. And Chet is a reasonable facsimile of him, as though he's very tall, slim, can long arms, can block a shot or two. Like he's really good. It's just Wemby. Just dude, I'll never forget seeing him do that Sham God move on Rudy Gobert at 7'5" or whatever he is, and finishing it with the right hand scoop layup across the lane. Like with another, I'm just almost like drooling at the mouth thinking of him with another summer under his belt with NBA trainers, and after a year of learning the NBA game, he's going to come back next year, and it's going to be amazing.
We'll piggyback off of that. We'll talk about the Thunder here for a moment. SGA, MVP, does that make sense to you at all, or is it still Jokic?
SGA, they've had a mini dip here in the last couple of weeks, right? They've had a couple of just like, you know, it's a long season. No one wins every game. That's what we have to think about. SGA 100% deserves to be in the running, especially if they finish with the number one seed. I think Joker is the better player, right? Joker has been absolutely phenomenal and unstoppable in every way, as he always is. But SGA has a little bit of that in him, too, where no matter how badly he seems to be playing, no matter what's happening, all of a sudden he catches fire. Offensively, he almost offensively is like Joker is in the post. He's like that at the perimeter. He's almost unstoppable. Like, he got to get to his spots no matter what, at his own pace. And defensively, he hasn't been bad at all. So, like, they're very similar. One guy plays in the post, and from the high post, the other guy, and SGA can post up, too. So, like, he's almost like the perimeter version of Joker without the passing. That's where Joker gets the advantage, obviously, the supernatural level of passing. And Shea doesn't have that, so that's where you give the Joker the advantage. But, honestly, I think a lot of voters are going to get voters fatigued, right? Joker already has two. I think Denver looks a little bit worse regular season this year, and it's a regular season award. It's a regular season award, so people could say what they want. I think the Thunder have far exceeded all expectations, and sure, other guys stepped up too, but Shea is the tip of the spear.
I believe the Nuggets are still the cream of the crop in the Western Conference. I think it's clear-cut. And as I mentioned to you before we hopped on, I believe the Celtics are the cream of the crop in the Eastern Conference. I think it's pretty clear-cut. When you look at OKC right now, holding a one-game lead over the Nuggets, James, how similar is Oklahoma City to last year's version of the Memphis Grizzlies, who are also a top-two team in the Western Conference?
That's a pretty good point. Fully healthy. The key difference I see is the guy. What's wrong with me right now? The guy that went off to the Rockets.
You're talking about Dylan Brooks?
Dylan Brooks. That's the key difference. There's really no Dylan Brooks, right? I think with the Memphis Grizzlies, it was really mostly about playing harder than the other team. They had some good guys at a few skill positions, but I think that's where the difference is. The Thunder are much more skilled at so many more positions. With Memphis, you basically had Ja, you got Jaren Jackson Jr., and then Baines turned himself into a very high level, very good player. After that, it's mostly specialists and guys who are just, you know, yeah. With this Thunder team, they go about 6 or 7 deep with really skilled guys. And even their specialists are really skilled. They got shooters at, like, every position. While Memphis couldn't quite say that. Every position. The big difference is they need one solid, bulky guy. People said they need to get a center. I think so, too. But guess what? Their coach is obviously, and their GM, are leagues better at what they do than what me as a fan. So maybe they don't. But I see the similarity because they play excessively hard. They play extremely hard. They come at you in waves. The biggest difference, though, is just the level of skill at every position, probably in the top 7 players in OKC. It's almost kind of a little scary.
Yeah, and listen, Sam Presti, to me, I tip my hat to him. I think he's done a remarkable job at OKC for as long as he has been there. Really, the big move that they made at the deadline, it was Gordon Hayward. And I think there were a lot of question marks at that particular time. James, Gordon Hayward has actually fit in pretty well with this team. I mean, he's given him a solid 16 to 20 minutes off of the bench. The numbers aren't going to pop out at you, but I mean, he's been able to distribute the ball well. He's been able to score at times. Gordon Hayward actually fits in very, very well with this team.
I'll ask you after my answer if you questioned that fit, because I thought he fit fine. Gordon Hayward was a little bit overtaxed to be the number one guy anywhere he went. The injury really obviously reset his career and his expectations, and he's been very injury prone since then. But I think Gordon Hayward has shown that he's much, not even as a number two guy, I think he exists this as a glue kind of three guy, where the scoring is going to be kind of a bonus, but he's a, you know, decent rebounder for his size. He used to be a decent defender. I haven't watched much of him now. I don't know if he still can get down and defend a little bit. Strong passer. Like, he has a good all-around floor game. Asking him to be a consistent 20, 25 point per game guy was probably a little too much overtaxing him, where he could do it, but I don't think he'd be very good if he was doing it. So, you know, he's also a guy that's getting up there a little long in the tooth. And he's had some humbling experiences as far as playing in Charlotte for a few years now. And he got his money, but, you know, losing a lot probably kind of, you know, probably teaches you something as far as your philosophy on basketball and life. So, yeah, he's in a spot now where he's expected to do nothing but come in and fill in the gaps. If you can hit a few threes, make a few drives, attack the closeout, and just not be a mess on defense, it's the perfect spot for him.
James, we go back to the beginning of the year. You and I were talking about the 20-game mark for a lot of teams. Get to the 20-game mark. Don't, you know, let's not stress on a team that's, you know, 5-7, a team that's, you know, whatever. 20-game mark is what we were talking about. Now we're under the 20-game mark left in the regular season. We'll talk about both conferences here. Give me two teams in the Eastern Conference that you would not want your Celtics to run into early on in the postseason. A team that's lurking around that, you know, well, they can be in the play-in round all the way up to the 6-5 seed. Same thing in the Western Conference. Two teams that you would not want to play as we get down to the final 20 games because maybe they're a little bit better than their record would indicate.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say this. Right now, Philly and Indiana are virtually tied for the 6/7 spot, right?
So yep.
If Philly gets Embiid back, that would give me a little bit of pause. Now, he'll be rusty. And, you know, I think Boston still might have their number, so I'm not too stressed about it. I wouldn't love that. And I'm going to say it. I'm not scared of the Miami Heat. I have a healthy respect for Miami Heat. And Miami Heat kind of know this. They are the Eastern Conference boogeyman. No matter what's going on with them, they just had a terrible loss the other night at home to the Washington Wizards. They've lost, I think, 3 in a row now, you know, some pretty ugly losses. But they do this every year around this time. And then, you know, they're Miami Heat, obviously, because, I mean, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to take that back. I want to face the boogeyman. I want to slay the demons. But not Miami. So the only team that I would really say is probably Philly. Philly, if they get Embiid back and he's 100% healthy and fresh for the playoffs.
All right, let's flip to the Western Conference because you got the Suns sitting at the 6th spot. I've actually been impressed with the Pelicans. They've been able to hold tight at the 5. You look at the play-in round right now, it's set. I mean, we know which 10 teams are going to get in. The Lakers seem to be playing a little bit better. The Mavericks, there's always that possibility. I don't believe in the Kings. Who is it in the Western Conference? Which of those teams?
So are you asking which team would the Celtics least like to see?
No, in the West.
In the first round, who Denver would least like to see?
Yeah, Denver. We'll say Denver. Let's jump. Because, again, I think the Celtics, again, to me, they're clear-cut in the East. The Nuggets are clear-cut in the West. Who would worry you if you were Denver early on in the postseason?
I would, again, just LeBron James and Anthony, giving him a weapon like Anthony Davis. LeBron James motivated, I think, is still probably in a short series, right, in a couple games, or one or two games might sway things. I think people probably will give him his respect. They do have a little more perimeter depth as far as defensively. They could use more size to defend Joker, because Joker's going to get anything he wants against the Lakers. We've seen that. But, I'd say the Lakers out of all those teams. Phoenix just doesn't have the depth behind their big three. Sacramento's been a mess, and defensively they don't really stop anyone, so I don't think much worried about them. Joker's not worried about them too much. Dallas, can put up points on a good night, but Luka being that dominant guy, I think, is becoming sort of a problem for that team that they really need to look at. I'll say the Lakers.
And if you look at the potential path for the Nuggets, I was looking at this last night. Let's say the Nuggets grab the one seed. The idea of having to play LeBron, AD in round one, and then potentially having to play Kawhi, Paul George, and the Clippers in round two, it's pretty taxing for a defending champ. That'd be a tough stretch to get back to the Western semis. I think they would do it, but it's still, that can be a very difficult path.
Yeah, and we know that the West is a stronger conference this year, and looking at, like, that's, you know, then also lurking. Let's say he has to face Rudy Gobert and a very big, physical, rugged Timberwolves team. New Orleans, they got some pieces that are kind of scary, but I don't think anybody's really worried about them in the playoffs right now. But, that would be probably one of the most impressive playoff runs to happen if he has to go through the Lakers and go through, the kind of last gasp. They know, like, the end is nearing kind of Clippers. They're gonna be fully motivated, too.
He's James Holas, always kind enough to take out the time to join us on Monday. James, that was a fun conversation. I know we kind of jumped all the way around, but we are less than 20 games to go in the regular season. I know you're amping things up as well, doing a little bit more podcasting work. Give us all the information on where we can find more James Holas.
Just mostly on Twitter, at Snotty Drippin. That's my homage to Scottie Pippen, who was my favorite player growing up, at Snotty Drippin. And I'm hopping on the Casual Diehards pod. Once a week, we're doing it tonight with some Knicks fans, unfortunately, but they're good people. So check us out on all platforms, Casual Diehard podcast.
James, always great to get you on. Appreciate the time. Can't wait to do it again next week.
You the man, brother. Thanks again.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios, and it's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.